welcome you inside another edition of the Hoopball Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comanche here with you, alongside, as always, the incomparable, the all-knowing Jill Adge. And joining us on this Friday edition is a good friend of mine. He's the Sac Republic MC, main media man. He's worked for the Sacramento Kings, MC'd some games, which is, on a quick aside, become like a tradition for gentlemen from Redding, California, to MC for the Sacramento Kings. Currently, Scott Freshour has been doing it for a very long time. He was a Foothill graduate in Redding, California, and our guest used to live in Redding. That's how I met him. And he's a man with a lot of opinions and a great voice, and he's in a very echoey room. I'm excited. You always find some good spots to hunker down, dude, and join us. So without further ado, we have Connor Sutton with us today. Hi, Connor.
Thank you for that introduction. I would have to say I went back and listened to the last time I was on with when we did the fan forum, and I thought my mic sounded good. So I don't know what's going on your guys'. No, I'm just kidding. It must be me. I'm in a different room as last time. But
no, you are.
Excited to be back on with you guys. Love the podcast and really enjoy listening a couple times, three times a week.
Yeah. Well, you're one of our dedicated fans. And I meant to shout out your podcast. That's what I forgot to say. I got distracted by the blank room that you're in again. Connor has a podcast for the Sac Republic. It's called The Breakaway. Anything else you want to, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We got one coming out today. We actually just announced today a lot of our roster changes heading into the offseason, guys who aren't coming back. So a lot of big decisions that happened. And I sat down with our president and GM, Todd Dunnevant, to talk about some of those changes, talk about his decision to bring back head coach Mark Briggs, and a lot of other stuff. What kind of guys are looking for heading into the offseason? So a lot of good stuff. So yeah, check that out on The Breakaway.
Absolutely. And there's really no one, if you're a Sac Republic fan and you want to hear what's going on with the Sac Republic, Connor Sutton is your main voice. Yep. And insider. He's your James Hamm. So definitely follow Connor on Twitter, on Instagram, whatever it is, whatever. You're a tweeter, right? You tweet.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say Jill is like the best person to follow on Twitter during Kings games.
Oh, for sure.
And it's like not even close. But I mean, sorry to other people out here. But
slamming me too for no reason.
No, I just mean that I need to probably be live tweeting a little more on the Kings games. I just like chime in. I'm so behind. I'm like the live streamer. I'm like 2 minutes behind, you know? So I'm like, yeah. By the time my tweet's out, it's like way too late.
You're
so.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we're going to cover a lot today on this episode. I'm sad because I don't want to talk about the last Kings game, but that's what we're going to do first.
Just when you could just throw it in the trash and, you know, move on.
You want to do that, Jill?
I mean, that's what they did. Yeah. They watched tape and probably said, you can't keep thinking about this. Like,
yeah. There are one of us has like an echo. I don't know if that's me. I might be echoing. There we go. It went away.
Okay.
Cool.
But yeah,
we're all losing our minds.
I would assume they watched a tape and then it was, if you're really stacking days, like throw it away because you can't come in thinking about your last three losses. Like you gotta.
That's true.
But yeah.
We are going to.
I don't know. I mean, people might want to hear about it, but it's depressing. So
I will ask. Connor, what his takeaways were. The Kings lost, if you hadn't been paying attention for some reason, haven't joined us and being as upset as we are. Now, the Kings are 5-7. They've lost three straight games. They lost 136 to 117 to the Spurs. It seemed as though the Spurs could never miss a shot whenever the Kings started to put together a little bit of a rally. Some dude named Lonnie Walker would hit a three, or DeJounte Murray, who's very good, would make a shot as he dives into the lane. He's, you know, they're the Spurs, De'Aaron Fox, that's who DeJounte Murray is. No one showed up except for De'Aaron Fox, ironically. He finally came out and broke out of his slump, 37 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. But yeah, it's a trash game is what it was. So Connor, tell us about the trash. What did you think of it?
I don't know how to answer that. All right, I have a couple thoughts.
Yes, please.
Harrison Barnes has been our leading scorer throughout the season, and he only took 8 shots in 31 minutes. I feel like as a guy, I'm not saying he's our number one option, but he has been the most consistent offensive player so far this year, throughout game to game. And I just think 8 shots is too few for him. I know we were cold from beyond the arc and the Spurs hit 18 threes in this game. So
there's
a little bit there. The other thing is, and I actually tweeted this, like defensively, the rotations were just really bad. And I think that's a couple of reasons. Like Greg Popovich knows that the Kings, after one or two rotations, like they get lost. especially on team defense. So they tried to exploit that a little bit. And I thought that was one of the issues. And then the effort. I mean, the effort kind of goes hand in hand with team defense and rotations. But I have to say, it is demoralizing, right? I would imagine when you rotate correctly, when that happened a couple times, and then they hit a three anyway, and it doesn't matter. And so I think that they started to break down after that.
Yeah, you said that. The stat, the Spurs were 18 of 32. That's 56%. You're going to win most of the games in the NBA if you shoot 56% from three. And they shot like 54% from the field in general. The Kings, on the other end, 10 of 36 on three. And then Fox had 37. Their second leading scorer had 13. Two people had 13. Chimezie Metu, who should be starting at power forward, and Davion Mitchell.
The problem with our depth right now is, like, I think at one point he was even playing the three. Like, I mean, this is our issue with, like, you can say, oh, this team has depth, but you don't have depth at every position. And when you have two key guys that are out on injuries, the depth issue based on positions is glaring. Like, we all said that going into the season. You have, what, five or six bigs sitting on the bench. Three, you know, prior to the last couple games that were not getting any kind of minutes. Now they're being kind of thrown in there and almost being put out of position. Like, if you're going to play Metu at the four, or if you're going to go small ball and maybe play him at the five sometimes, totally get it. But when he's out there playing the three, like, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's the current state.
You're asking a lot of a lot of guys. And this was kind of my thing too, is we knew the injuries coming in and they still assigned Woodard back. So again, like, you can say you have depth, but my thing with Damian, you know, over the summer, and then I was saying it with you to start this too, is normal teams, yes, you don't necessarily rely on, like, your 12 to 15. Like, you know, I mean, it's a luxury when you're not having to rely on that. The Kings have never been that, you know, have always had that issue. And you were hoping they weren't going to have that issue this year, and they shouldn't, unless you have COVID or injury. Like, right? I mean, that's where you're seeing the Sixers and the Bucks have had to use all 15 guys. Like, I mean, there's only the Bucks have one player, Brooke Lopez, who hasn't played in almost every game. That's because he literally only played the first game. I mean, 1 through 15, you're having to throw guys out there. Yes, that's not the norm, but when you go out for 10 days for COVID, or if you have injuries where you're missing three games, you're going to need everybody on your bench. And if everybody on your bench is not ready to play, that's an issue, especially if you're trying to win now, which is what we're being told. So to me, like, I don't even want to say, like, waste a roster spot, but it's like, you're telling me there's no talent out there that couldn't be ready. Like, right now we're having to throw Metu at the three because we're not bringing King up and we're taking, you know, Woodard back to Stockton. Like, he was active for a couple games, but then they said he was out because of injury. So is he rehabbing? Like, we still have no clarification there. But again, like,
the Kings never share injury diagnoses.
Right. And so we don't know, like, what. I understand you brought Ramsey, but you need length. Like, and kudos to Ramsey for being ready. But your length issue is showing. And when you have 6'8" guys in Stockton, like, that's a problem to me. Again, we should not have to rely on those guys. But when you have multiple injuries, that's when you have to rely on them. Like, there's no way about it. I'm not calling for these guys to play when everyone's healthy, right? I mean, when the team is there, you're going to play your normal rotation. My issue is when you have players out and you're still not using players that you have in correct positions.
What do you think, Connor?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important position, well, maybe not the most important, but defensively is where I'm thinking at. Is that swingman spot, that 3-4 combo, because they can switch onto guards and at least can hang a little bit. And as Jill's saying, not having depth at that spot, and when one guy goes down, like, they're screwed. Their second unit is going to get dismantled. And we know the NBA, that the Keys coaches and players are smart. They're going to hunt guys that they know they can take off the dribble, or they can post them up down low. Not posting up isn't really a thing, but go one-on-one and go at them, and they hunt, and that's what they do. And so I think that position specifically is really important. And, you know, if you want to talk about, I know we're going to talk some Bagley stuff here in a little bit when you're saying, hey, we don't want it. Like, is there something? And I have a whole bunch of lists of
hey, I'm excited.
Possible landing spots, but I went way too deep on it. So I apologize in advance. You know, trying to get somebody back who can maybe fill in that spot specifically, who can be that maybe third wing or third power forward, can play a little bit of both. I think that's huge, especially it's an 82 game season. Guys are going to have injuries. They're going to be, and it's so important to have depth at that spot.
Yeah. I want to commend Jeremias Ramsey for, and Metu actually, for being ready, coming in the game. Ramsey and Metu did not approach the game like they were guys that hadn't been playing. They came out and they shot. Metu had a little Buddy Hield in him. He was just seeing three, taking three. And he was actually making them and then getting back on defense, like, which are things that, you know, Hield can sometimes forget to do. So I'm okay with seeing more Metu for sure. And Ramsey is a pure scorer, very athletic player that's very young and needs development. In a game like that on Wednesday, perfect time for him to go out there and give some run. I'm glad that Walton did that. He didn't really have a choice because they were short on people. But I hope we see more Jeremias Ramsey. It seems like they don't care for Robert Woodard at all. They didn't give him very much run in summer league, and they haven't given him much run in the preseason. They didn't in the preseason or this season. I don't know what that's about. I don't know if they've decided Robert Woodard's not someone they care about anymore. It's weird because he was a talented
sending
player
him down
college.
Is clear development. Like, and he had been injured for so much.
Like,
of
how
last
raw
year.
Is he? You know, and, I didn't know he was that raw.
Well, but the thing is, he missed like a whole year of development. He had the bubble to develop, but then when he left the bubble, he was hurt. So the only time those guys were getting minutes last year is when the Kings were getting killed. Like, we're not a team that goes out and blows people out. And so you can put in those guys for a quarter and have them get run. And so where was the development? I mean, you're developing, there was no practice, there was nothing. So again, I understand his setbacks. But it's also hard to watch other people in those drafts that are out there ready to play, like that didn't get that either. You know what I mean? Like that have gone out and produced. And then we're told he's injured again. I don't know if that's still the case, but he was out again the last, or at least they had him active, but he was out with, I don't know if it was hamstring, like there was some sort of muscle. And then they were going on the road trip and assigned him back. So I guess we'll find out this weekend if he's getting run in Stockton, but again, you need ready bodies, and he's your third backup. Like, right, he's your backup to your kind of 3-4. Like, that's what they drafted him as. And so, I mean, I don't like you even, and heaven forbid the Kings have more injuries, and then you really have no depth there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're able to have, it's awesome that you have Barnes and Harkless and Metu that are playing multiple positions, but again, you're still putting guys in bad positions by forcing them, you know, maybe more minutes in one area where they should be in another. At the end of the day, yes, they're pros and they should figure it out, but this is the King. So it's, you know, I wouldn't hold your breath.
I have to ask now this, Connor, if you're choosing between Metu, Ramsey, or King, I'm not even going to put Woodard in the equation. Which one of those three guys would you like to be seen on the court right now that they're shorts and bodies?
I just don't know. I think Ramsey's a little too small to be defending some of those bigger wings. I would say, I don't know though. I mean, cause then he adds the shooting capabilities offensively. So it spaces the floor a little bit, you know, I don't know. Can I pick answer D of maybe try and go find somebody else?
Yes, you can.
Because that's, I think, the
that's what Joe wants to answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think is should be the plan. Like, they have a lot. They have a logjam. I wouldn't say logjam. They have a lot of players who can play at guard spot. You know, Buddy Hield, I know that's a different conversation. But if they do try to move Buddy this season, it seems like either going after a star, taking a swing, that's a possibility. If they use Bagley's deal that's up at the end of the year, as a contract expiring, but I don't know. We'll see. But I just right now they don't have an answer there. And I think that's going to continue to be a glaring issue.
And I know Lewis had like his first two really good games in Stockton. But let's just kind of let that simmer. If he continues to keep doing that, give him run. Like,
yeah,
to me, I mean, why would you not? He's clearly showing that he's ready to move up. Whether that means he gets, you know, the minutes or, but to me, these are kind of the opportunities when they change the rule to allow you to have 50 games, right? Instead of you spending days with the team. So to me, these were the perfect opportunities to kind of bring him up in and, you know, your shot. And then you can bring it back down when these bodies come back. They clearly don't feel that way. And maybe they feel like they still want to keep developing him down there, knowing that they're eventually going to bring him up. And that's understandable too. But again, like, we don't know, right? Like, we're kind of going in blind with all this. But to me, the nice thing I'm seeing with him down there is he's showing the offense and defense, which was always his thing, even coming out of college, right? And then when he was with Detroit in their G League, and then when he was with the Knicks in the bubble last year, he was one of the top, you know, ones to watch because he was playing both ends of the floor and hitting the three. So he also was very young. I think he's like 22. So it's not like we have to throw him, you know, right out there. We can keep developing. But my thing is, he's on the court, like, he's developing, he's working. That's what we want to see. It's like, unfortunately for the Woodards, where we're not even seeing them on the court and we're not seeing development. Like, that's where, I mean, when it comes to last roster spots for me on a win now team that's bad, like, you need talent. And then when you're 1 through 10 aren't performing, there's no one on the bench that's going to scare them saying, oh man, you know, I could really lose this spot. Like, I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, there's no competition.
Yeah. I will say that. And then I want to give Connor the floor for a couple minutes to catch us up on how he's feeling about the Kings. But currently with how this team is constructed, I think it's foolish to try and say that Lewis King and or Chimezie Metu should not be playing over guys like Mo Harkless and Tristan Thompson. That's just my personal belief. I understand those guys have been there in the league. If we're talking about trying to get the most out of someone on both ends, Tristan Thompson and Mo Harkless are not going to be those guys. I'd rather roll the dice on the upside of
what
Luke King and Chimezie
Metu. Plus minus is on the court and off the court.
Throw numbers at me, Jill. That's cheating. What is his plus minus?
He's 64th percentile in the league at a plus +5.
That's good, right?
Yes. You want to be orange, not blue. You want to be like in the upper. I mean, he's 64% at a plus +5.
He's so boring,
and
though, man.
Mitchell 63 at a plus +4, right? And Warren, this is right. Fox has not been playing well. What do you think he is? 35th percentile at a minus -5 when he's on and off. So again, like, I know it's not pretty. And yes, you can interchange lineups and all that stuff, but I'm just saying his on and off the court, like, if you're looking at numbers, it's working.
Yeah.
When you have injuries, it's even more glaring. Yes. Like, I think those numbers have gone down when these injuries happen, but I'm sorry to, I'm all for mixing up the starting lineup, but for kicking Harkless out of the rotation completely, I don't agree with that.
I agree. I also just want to make sure that we might have to wait until after this episode to explain to Sam what a plus minus was. Because I heard you a couple episodes being like, I don't even know what a plus minus is.
It's like in the NFL, there's like the QBR.
Well, this
quarterback
is an
efficiency
differential.
It's like a stat that I'm like, yeah.
This isn't like the per game plus minus. This is if a player's on or off the court.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
When he's on the court, the team is
better.
No, but and he ranks 64th percentile in the league in that.
And as a second unit, that's a second unit type play. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
100%, which is why we loved him last year off the second unit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm going to die
on
this hill.
Why you were saying we need to get another player like that where he's not necessarily being forced to do more than what you're asking. Right. You'd normally ask of him.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So here we go, Connor. Don't throw numbers at me. Just give me like 5 minutes without numbers, okay? My brain can only handle so much. No, you came in before the season with our little guest galore episode, our roundtable with Christina Warner and John Bull and Sean Holko and a great group, and gave your prediction as to where the Kings you thought were headed. You said a play-in. I think you said ninth. And then I think you said 42 wins. What did you say?
38 wins.
Oh, you were the low ball. That's right. You were the pessimist of the group.
I feel great about it, to be honest.
Which now I was about to say, now you feel really good about that prediction. So I want to give you a couple minutes here, Connor, to update us on how you're feeling about the Kings as a whole, like how panicked you might be of this 3-game losing streak, if you're getting flashbacks to last year, and then if you're still thinking 38 in the play-in seems reasonable. Go ahead.
All right. So I think 38, right now it's pretty, I don't know exactly what percentages. It's pretty close as to where they've started off. Like, they're on track for around that number. But taking that aside, panic rating, very low. I know they're on a 3-game slide. I get all that. I know they talk about stacking days. Well, sometimes loses losses also stack up. So this is a huge opportunity against the Thunder to really like reset. And this is a game they absolutely should win. I literally looked at the Thunder roster and I, after seven guys, like I had to like double check. Like that's how like short there. I mean, I knew some of the rookies and things just because of like going through draft guides and things, but like I'm shocked. As far as like De'Aaron Fox, I know there's been a panic button kind of on social about, I do not panic at all about De'Aaron Fox. So he added muscle this summer. And for a guy who is so quick and relies on quickness and speed, sometimes it takes a long time to kind of adjust to that weight addition. It makes you a little slower in the foot speed initially. And I think he's going to figure that out quickly. I had someone I played with who put on like 15 pounds. And I know this is way different, but it took that person a while to kind of adjust to that body type. And I think we see that kind of various additions around the league. So I'm not worried about that. Where I am worried about Fox and the Kings in general is De'Aaron Fox is so good in the open floor. We know that he's so fast. Fourth quarter execution and half court offense. If you look at the advanced statistics, which I know Jill loves that kind of stuff, that's where I get worried, because guess what? In fourth quarters, the game slows down. It just does. You have to beat teams in the half court, especially offensively. And I worry that when his 3-point shot isn't falling, which I know 3-point numbers are down across the league this year, his as well as many others, when it's not falling, it really closes down what he is able to do, because teams will start to sag off him a little bit and make him try and shoot it. So I think that's the big issue for me. However, Halliburton out for 2 games. I know betting odds are whatever it is. It is what it is. But he was out for that San Antonio Spurs game. The line was 5. They announced he was out and it changed to 4. So, and I do think betting lines matter. Like I really do, as far as perception of where teams are at. And they thought the Kings should win that game. And I mean, yes, that's why the NBA is a wild, wild league where team upsets happen like often, because sometimes teams just had off nights and they kind of punt in the third quarter and say, hey, they're shooting well, let's plan for the next game. And I don't like that, but I just think the most interesting thing that is, I think the Kings have a move or two to make to really get to their best selves. Jill and I, we talked about it just now about maybe finding another swingman that can help with Harkless and Harrison Barnes. What are they going to do with Buddy Hield? That's a big question mark. Bagley's a whole nother story. I know we're going to get to that. Like I said, panic rating low. I still think they're in a good spot, but they have to beat the teams like the Thunder. They have to beat the teams like the Spurs. They aren't a consistent team. It's been an issue for, I don't know, forever, it seems like. So I think if they can figure out a way to be consistent, they can learn how to close games and execute offensively down the stretch in fourth quarters, I'll feel much better about them, but we haven't quite seen that yet.
Yeah, that's very fair. I mean, we're what, 10, 11,
12 games,
12 games in. I mean, we're not even to the
feels first, like an eternity.
The first quarter of the season. Yeah. Yeah, I
mean, 70 games left.
Yeah. With between the first and the sixth hardest schedule, right? Like, so, I mean, we just have to keeping it close.
Yep.
The half court offense, Connor, something I'm going to pick out of what you said. I remember when Walton got hired, one of the things that Vlade had told him and made clear that he wanted to get better at, which is he was hoping Luke could do, was the half court offense. And Luke, you know, when they started 0-5 that year, he said a big reason was we're slowing things down, trying to teach these guys to play better defense. And then also to understand that you can't just run and gun the whole time. To your point, in the fourth quarter, it's hard to keep that up and you wear yourself out. So the team with Luke Walton was supposed to learn, unlike they did under Dave Yeager so much, to succeed a little bit more in half-court sets. It's like they have no idea what a half-court set is under Luke Walton. At least that's how it's been looking.
Is that Luke or is that Alvin Gentry, though?
There's a good follow-up question.
But that's where I have the question, is that doesn't look like an Alvin Gentry offense, right? Like
right.
That's why it doesn't make – I'm totally confused in it. Or is it these players just are not capable of playing the offense that he requires? We don't have a lot of cutters. Like, our guys love to just go stand.
Yes.
Like, there's no movement. Like, there's no movement. It's very.
It's Buddy.
Like,
Buddy's the only one that likes to move.
But even then, like, our transition, like, offense is pretty non-existent, too. I mean, Foxworth, he was points per possession. He was 1.17 last year at a B percentile for the rest of the league. Right now he's at 1.02, 15th percentile in the league at an F score. Like, so, I mean, you went from 77th percentile to 15th percentile. Like, that's, so like, you're not even getting the easy buckets that you're, that was your bread and butter before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it's,
what do you think? It is infuriating. It's absolutely infuriating. So that's what I was going to ask you, Connor. Is there like a solution to that? I don't know. Is it the players? Like, what do you think is the problem?
I mean,
if you're trying to guess,
I am no head coach or offensive
guru. You're a basketball guy. I know you are. We've done our games together.
So I think the big thing is, like Jill said, is cutting off the ball. And this is a problem like NBA wide. It's not just the Kings. Like, a lot of guys, when they don't have the ball, they stand and watch, or they're told to stand in the corner to create spacing. Those are the two things. What are the best offensive teams in the league, at least right now, right? It's the Golden State Warriors, and they are playing well, even though Steph hasn't been that great, other than that one great 50-point night, Dad. Like, they move so well off the ball. They're always moving. And defensively, like, if I'm defending somebody, the last thing I want to have to do is chase you around the court. That's the last thing I want to have to do. So I just think off-ball movement is so big, and creating a little more of that. I even think, like, they haven't been using a pick and roll. I think, Jill, you tweeted about this. They haven't been using the pick and roll very much in certain specific, like, situations.
Yeah, well, especially with Halliburton out. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, that, I understand, because the playmaking does drop a little bit when he's out. But I just think the off-ball movement is so big. And some guys don't want to do it. They just want to stand at the three-point line because they're the fear of, like, creating, like, losing the spacing inside. I understand. But there's got to be solutions there, because that'll get guys more engaged offensively too.
Yeah, they took – I mean, Holmes had a short leash last game. And to me, I saw people were like, oh, well, he's not getting involved or whatever. They didn't even attempt to pass him the ball or to run a pick and roll. Like, I don't know what the guy's supposed to do. Like, I understand certain teams are going to try and take it away, but there was no creativity to try and get yourself out of it either. It was, oh, we're just going to yank him.
Yeah, like, the Holmes not playing was just making Katie Christensen Hunter mad. Like, it was a point she kept making. And I was sitting there thinking the same thing. I was like, why is he not playing? It's kind of bizarre. I didn't think it was his fault that they were playing like shit. But the thing we haven't said that I meant to say, it is very discouraging that the starting five, two games in a row, I get they haven't had Halliburton, but they've come out and looked like they weren't ready to go. Then the bench, they look like they were, like they should have been starting, you know, like they were ready to get out there and play defense, offense, pass the ball, push the ball. It's bizarre. Bizarre is the word I'm going to keep using, or gross, actually, if you want to quote Luke Walton.
All right.
Gross.
I think it's a little bit encouraging, though. Like,
okay,
I
spin zone.
Here's why. Yeah, I'm back on the zag. here's why. Because sometimes you need that second unit to kind of pick up the first unit when they don't play well. That's going to happen. Like, I don't even think we've seen a complete game. You could say the Charlotte game, but like, De'Aaron Fox hasn't really got going other than this last game, and nobody else was. So when you have a game where everybody gets going offensively, which maybe if they start cutting more, Jill, that might happen. But I think it's an encouraging thing that the second unit has the ability to, when the Kings are down 10, 15 coming in, you know, the 4 minute to go in the first quarter or early second quarter, they can come and make a run. I think that's huge. I think that's important. And as we talk about like depth, those depth issues, if a second unit can do that, that to me, that means they're a successful second unit.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned how Fox, you know, got going, but nobody else did. But if you're without Halliburton and you're without Terrence Davis, you need Buddy Hield to score more than 6 points in 31 minutes. Like, that's your other, you know, scoring threat. Like, no one else is going to come in there and no offense, blow anybody away. Like, that's not necessarily their job. And I know even Harrison Barnes had, it was the first time, it was like his season low and even shot attempts. So it was just like you just weren't seeing involvement from other. And to me, you didn't even see adjustments, like, right. And that to me, that's on the coaching staff. I know you can make rotation adjustments, but scheme wise and I think like, it didn't look like you really adjusted much. And kudos to the Spurs. Like, they played their best game by far of the season. And it sucks when that usually comes against us. But, I mean.
Hey, can I say one thing? I am really wishing that Buddy Hield Kuzma trade happened, by the way.
Yes.
The Wizards are like 8-3 right now. And how great. I mean, I think Kuzma would be like that perfect spot.
They have a really good new coach.
Yeah, I was waiting for Jill to say that. He is a very good coach.
Their depth, like, completely. Yeah, they took one guy and changed their depth roles, and they have everybody buying in, right? Yep. And they brought in a coach who, again, had people in the top 10 on offense and defense.
And Montrezl Harrell's been just going nuts off the bench, averaging like 15 and 10. I was going to say, because I just said his name and now it just is confusing. Mattia Divots, our guest last week, who I try to never, when he says things about basketball, I just usually nod my head. I'm like, sure, if that's what you think, I'm going to agree with you. He said a very good point, though, for real, how, you know, the starting unit, this is very rudimentary. It's just, you know, when he explained it to me, I was like, it's fair. The starting unit sets the pace, sets the tone for a game. And then the bench unit, their most important job, of course, is to keep you in the game at all costs. And what we're seeing right now is the bench do exactly that for the Kings. They are keeping them in these games, but the starting unit is not setting the tone, is not doing anything well.
It's digging them
so
in a hole.
It's exactly. It's weighing them. It's create this off-balance nature in which you're playing where it's like, now it's just like up to the bench, it seems, to help you
get
in this game.
Well, it's as easy as looking at for most of the season, right, we'd been in every game because we weren't getting into these holes.
Yes.
And so your bench should not necessarily be spending all their time trying to dig you out of a hole. You're looking at them to bring you up while the other stars are out, like
or
the
keep
opposing team stars. Yes. Or again, yes, keep it there. But when you go on these runs, all our runs were just to get us back to even. And then the other team's going to go on a run, right? And so then you're right back down again.
Because we are going to talk about Bagley, as Connor's been hinting at. I want to ask you both a question real quick. I almost tweeted it out, then I deleted it because I was like, I don't want people to get mad at me about saying this. I believe Tyrese Haliburton Tyrese Haliburton's the most important player on this current Kings team. I think he is the straw that stirs the drink. And without him, even if Fox is putting up 37, they struggle. Connor and Jill, starting with Connor, would you somewhat agree? Would you agree? Like, I'm starting to believe that Tyrese Haliburton is the most important guy.
I can understand it to a point because to me, he's more consistent than a number two Buddy Hield, right? Like, if he's your number two guy, like, you know what you're getting consistently out of him. Like, I know he's not yet looked at that star. I still need to see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, years of it. But in the sense of he's our consistent number two. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, where if Fox is going to be Fox, but
no one else steps up.
It's rare that Halliburton's going to come in and put up like zeros right across the board. Like, he will find ways to impact a game elsewhere. And that's one of the things you love about him. We kind of saw this last year when he was out, right? Like, there was some, the team had struggles when everyone was healthy and it was just him. This team struggled. And I think that might have started one of our, you know, kind of losing streaks, if I memory correctly.
Yeah.
But he's showing his worth. Yes. It's hard. At this point, it's hard for me to say more than Fox or not just because of Fox's history. If you're getting old Fox, to me, he's your most important player.
Which is what most people would say. I like to be divisive and just throw grenades into conversations.
I was just going to say. Wrong with it.
Everybody tweeted Sam that he wants the Kings to trade Fox. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, but I know, but it's a good point. I mean, the thing is like, I need to see a few more games if you're going to make that point where Fox is out and see Haliburton have to close a game and create when he's got the best guard defender on him, because Fox is going to have the best defender on him, not Haliburton. I think that's a factor there too.
Okay. I didn't think about that. That's a good point. I think if the Kings are going to go out and find people, which I'm sure they will, McNair is a guy that's always looking to upgrade this team in some way. It's, you know, this is easier said than done, but they got to be players like a Haliburton, the selfless players that are making sure things ebb and flow while guys like Fox and Hield and Barnes stuff the stat sheet. I just think that's why his impact is so much missing right now, is because now you don't have that guy to kind of, I don't know how to put it, level things off, make the team remember that it's not about you, it's about everybody. You know, we got to win together.
He's also such a really good playmaker for everybody.
Like, a facilitator.
For himself and everybody else. And so when you don't have that, you get a lot of standing. Like, I mean, it's
so much standing. Like, they're getting paid to stand. Like, that's what's in their contract. guys, go ahead and just stand here. They're killing it if that's part of their job description.
And what's still crazy is the Kings are still a top offense in the league, like even doing what they do. Like that's what's so frustrating to, well, I wouldn't say frustrating, but it's like, you know, they can be better and it's still like, but to your point, Connor, where it's a league wide, right? Like issue. I mean, it's, yeah.
We said it, the NBA seems to be throwing it back to like the 80s and 90s, slowing things down, having you need to earn your buckets, earn getting to the line. We're seeing more fights, almost like perfectly in tune with that, is now guys are starting to brawl each other. I'm so here bear for hugs. That. Bear hugs.
Last night was just bear hugs.
Yeah, Kevin Pippen's tweet made me laugh. He goes, it's such a French thing to just give a hug. Like, that's what Gobert did. Just bring it here, man.
It was like, no you.
Yeah,
and then they were like, oh. Yeah.
That was lame, but at least there's some action happening. All right, Bagley conversation. I asked Jill and Connor that to try and think of who we think Marvin, well, first off, try and figure out if you know something I don't, what the fuck is happening? What is going on? Everyone played in this last game against the Spurs, except for Marvin Bagley. And we haven't touched on it, but he's refusing to go in games. Apparently that's according to Sean Cunningham. He had it a little bit of it on video where Luke was like, can you go in? And Marvin said no, and sat back down. So we're going to let the conversation that we all fear but also want to talk about at the same time. Bagley, Connor,
I don't understand how the process. I don't think Luke is like, hey Marvin, like, would you mind if you could check into this game?
It's not like an inconvenience to you.
Like, well, I just mean like,
yeah,
how does how does this help Marvin? Like, what's his game here? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, even like the Ben Simmons thing, which I don't want to get into, but like, I somewhat understand what he's doing, I guess. I don't think it's working necessarily, but like, I don't understand why, like, how this helps Marvin and like why the reason he wouldn't go. Like, I don't understand that.
Well, and the Kings, I mean, this is a replica of the Belly situation last year, right? Belly was pissed that he was going to be not in the rotation for Bagley because they wanted to, right, develop him, and he was going to be the future. And then, you know, we come to find out later in the season, like, that all that had happened and he was kind of refusing things, and asked to be traded and all that. And no one on the team had an issue with it, right? Like, it was whatever. So, I mean, seeing what happened the other night doesn't really surprise me in that same sense, because there's a history there. And yeah, the players didn't have an issue with it then. But when did we become oh my gosh, there's a truck that drove by, sorry. When did we become a thing where instead of going out there and busting ass and I'm going to prove you, like, to you why I should be out there with these minutes and make you look stupid, right? Like, to now just saying, oh, F it, like, I'm just going to sit here and make my money. Like, I mean, I can understand you're frustrated, but you had your agent, you know, put out this whole, you know, hate list because you're not going to be in the rotation. And then when you're asked to go in, you don't even want to go out there to try and prove them wrong. Like, I don't know.
Who do you blame more, Connor?
That just frustrates me. Like, you can have Bagley issues, but you're also being paid to sit there and play whenever you're asked to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand the whole situation. I don't want to talk about that piece of it. Like, I was thinking about it. Like, I really did a deep dive on, like, what is his trade value? And then also, what team would want to take a flyer on him? Like, there's a lot of teams that are trying to, like, get into this play-in situation. There's not a lot of tank teams who might be like, hey, let's try this guy out. Or if they do, they already have projects to worry about. So, like, I don't even know his value, because who would want to trade for him, even if it's something that's not, it's going to be an expiring deal, which I'm sure Jill is going to talk, like, Jill knows this stuff better than anybody. Like, his value is that he's an expiring deal. But, like, if to take that part out of it, like, what value is he going to bring to a team? What team is going to want to try and trade for him and maybe get his upside when they have guys at his position they want to invest in more?
Right. And I think it was Sam Amick on James' podcast with Sean was saying that he's still waking up as a thinking, I'm a number two pick, not I'm a basketball player. Like, to me, I thought that kind of spoke volumes, where you've had to see guys adjust their mindset, where, again, it's everything is not given to you just because you were a number two pick. Like, you still were 3 years, like, over 3 years into this. Like, you have to prove it still, like everybody else. And I know it's frustrating that, you know, you're not in the rotation. But again, like they said, you asked for a trade in the offseason. You didn't want to be here. These other guys want to be here and they're buying into whatever's, you know, being sold. So at some point, like,
I'm curious. I'm curious. Sam Amick does great work. I'm curious how he figured that out. How does he know what Marvin's thinking first thing he does in the morning? Did he text Marvin right as he woke up and like, hey, Marvin, what's on your mind? Tell me right now. That's some deep investigative journalism there by Sam. I'm joking, of course. You guys, I think Jill thinks I'm being serious. The way that was worded, like he wakes up thinking I'm a number two pick. Like, how does Sam know that? How does he know what's going on in Marvin's head? I don't think Marvin knows what's going on in Marvin's head right now. But I understand what you're saying. He still hasn't checked his ego, which is blatant.
It's the attitude, just, right? Well, and yeah. The rest of his team. Like, there's no one out there saying, like, dude, this is what we got to do, right? And, I mean, no one, like, I don't, you know, I feel bad for the kid, like, right? Like, we've said this multiple times. Like, it's injuries suck. And this has happened to a lot of people, regardless if you're a number two player or not. I mean, people have been out of the league, back in the league. Like, I mean, he's not the lone, you know, player
but he thinks
that
he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was
I mean,
me,
look
Marvin
at Josh Jackson. Like, I mean, who was what? A number four pick?
Three.
He was straight up cut and booted out and had to work his way back through the G League and is now on a Detroit team, but buying in and getting minutes now. Like, his, you know, his road was not easy either. But
taking ahead of De'Aaron Fox.
Right. And at the end of the day, like, we're talking as fans, they're talking as players, and front office is looking at salaries, right? Money. I mean, they have to look at a whole different piece than of the things that we look at. And so just cutting a guy is not, you know what I mean, who's on expiring is not smart either when it can be packaged. Look, you had Randolph who didn't play almost for a whole year and a Justin Jackson, and you had a team in Dallas who wanted to cut salary and you got a Harrison Barnes. Like, I mean, there are teams out there who, you know, whether it ends up happening or not, but I see the justification for holding on to things because other teams might want to start cutting stuff back or swapping young guys. Like, there's opportunity out there. So just sending them packing, you know, as a cutting them, you don't get that money back. So, I mean, it's, to me, it does you no good. If he's not causing a huge issue, which clearly by as coaching and players are saying, they don't care. So why should,
this happens
why should
more
we
than
care?
We realize, Jill? Like, do you think the players ask? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, and you saw it. Well, and usually it's kind of like told by me where last year you had Cleveland where Drummond played the first, you know, couple weeks of the season for maybe the first quarter. And then it was, okay, we're clearly decided, you know, we're tanking, like we're done. They made the mutual decision of he was going to sit for the rest of the games until the trade deadline to see if they could find a trade for him.
Right.
He had a big salary. They ended up having to eat it and they, you know, worked a buyout or whatever.
Right.
And then, and then he ended up, you know, getting signed for the Lakers and then, you know, now for the Sixers. But yeah, I mean, John Wall, yeah, who's sitting and they're telling him, oh, you're probably not going to play because no one wants that contract. And that's John Wall. I mean, that's
$40 million a year. Wait, I guess I was asking, do you think players say that they don't want to go into games more than we realize?
I think you've seen fights regarding that on the bench of things. So yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it happened again, like it happened last year and we didn't know about it until it was reported.
I just, one of those things we probably don't know half of it. It just happened to be caught on camera.
And I think it's usually more so where in this instance, it might be different to where there might already be more communication of like, you're out of the rotation. We're working on a trade. It's in everybody's best interest if we're not putting you out there so you don't get injured. And you know what I mean? Like, so that hopefully that can be worked upon. Because, I mean, that's honestly what I thought went on. Like, that's what I thought the deal was of why he wasn't going in is that was our issue last year is we had some people interested, but you got hurt. They didn't want the extra money of that year with you sitting on the bench for the rest of the year. Right. And so we're now hearing that Detroit's possibly interested again because he's healthy and there's only the 1 year left, right. That they would be paying, not 2 years. So I don't know if it's as much as like where you're telling someone who's, you know, hasn't had that conversation that they won't go in. But I want to say I've heard it before, and it usually causes some scuffles, which is why I think people were surprised that you were getting the bat, you know, the back, you know, pats or whatever. But I also think these players know each other, and they know what they have to do to each other mentally to stay up in a situation, or didn't want to escalate a situation, right? And maybe had conversations in the locker room that we're not privy to. That one surprised me either, because these guys, as we know, these players are not confrontational. Like, we've said that about our guys for a long time. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that they wouldn't have confronted them in front of everybody like that, you know.
That would only make things worse. You're putting gasoline on the fire.
You would ask 100%.
So, Connor, you did some dirty work. You did some deep diving trying to figure out where Bagley would fit. I'm curious to hear.
Okay, so this is a straight up, well, not necessarily a straight up trade. Okay. A couple options. I basically looked for teams that I'm like, okay, I could see they're not in a playoff hunt. Like, maybe they'll be willing to take a flyer. And then I also tried to find fit for the Kings. And we talked about the fit earlier of what the position I'm kind of looking for, which is like that 3-4 swingman, 3-and-D type guy. This is situations. Most of these are going to be Kings are going to have to throw something extra in.
Sure.
And again, this is them assuming that they are taking value of him as a player, not as an expiring. So the couple I came up with was, and this was, I know this is probably not, this one's the most unlikely of the group. Josh Hart from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Reggie Bullock from the Mavs. I think the Mavs are kind of in a weird spot right now. This one's definitely not going to happen, but we talked Detroit, maybe a Sadiq Bey, but again, the Kings would have to throw something else in there. Another swing guy. Little more straight up guys. Daniel House from Houston. Maybe they want an expiring, or maybe they're going to take a flyer. And then a couple San Antonio guys, Doug McDermott. I know he's a little more expensive, has a couple years on his deal, I believe. And Zach Collins are the guys that I was looking at. Now, if like you want to talk, I think where the Kings might get a little more interest, and I really don't know, because it's so early on in this process, but at least this year, like, is it something where they couple them together with Buddy Hield and go for a big swing, and they go after, I don't know, like a Pascal Siakam with a first rounder or a couple first rounders? I don't know. But I do think those are the guys I kind of looked at, and obviously salary matching. I made sure the salaries kind of at least got close on those as well.
Right.
I had one more. This is kind of interesting, but I don't know if this will happen. Bagley in a first, maybe for like a Jonathan Isaac type, or maybe he might have to throw more than that. He's been injured.
Get the anti-maxer to Vaxxer to
And I would almost be more interested in Mo Bamba. And they have, that was the same draft. Just being that, you know, you have Isaac back, but they're playing two centers right now with Wendell Carter Jr. and Mo Bamba. But that's, if they don't want to pay him, he's actually showing stuff this season, which is nice. But Orlando is a good one.
Yeah, I like Orlando, but it's they have a lot of big men. So yeah, there'd obviously need to be an exchange of big men. Now you're just trading Bagley for another big guy.
Well,
that
would be an expiring to me. Like, if they don't want to pay, or they just paid Isaac, right? Like, if they want to get rid of that, and then you're taking back an expiring, like, that could.
I think the most realistic, and you said it, Connor, the most realistic teams are obviously the ones at the bottom, and the two teams that scream like, yeah, we'll buy, we'll take that potential, we'll do it, why not, are Houston, who obviously their general manager has a direct connection to our general manager, and then Detroit. And Detroit apparently already is expressing some interest because he's healthy, and they definitely need like some young, talented big men for sure on Detroit's roster.
And they're in complete rebuild.
They're
right?
in complete
like,
rebuild.
I mean,
Kelly Olynyk's
so they have nothing to lose. They're not trying to win now, so they can throw him out there and.
If Kelly Olynyk is playing 30 minutes a game for you, you're obviously not trying to win. So,
and now he's hurt, like, and you don't even have Olynyk now. Damn. Like, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. And so I was going to say, for Detroit, I would like to see them go after Grant or even Olynyk, because, yes, they're not young, but in addition to Bay, but those are guys that you could use if you're really trying to win now, and those contracts aren't necessarily going to hurt you, but fill stretch positions and length of need.
Well, Detroit's going to have to kind of change their timeline, right? With, I mean, they're obviously not good, but Grant is kind of on a further, he's a little bit older, a little more, you know, he's been in the NBA a little bit while. So maybe he's a trade guy they can get picks for. And maybe it is a Bagley and a Buddy, maybe. I don't know.
Please. Please.
No, not even that. I just mean, I think the contract.
I mean, if you could steal a Bay and a Grant for a Buddy and a Bagley, I mean, and a pick, like, you would take that. I mean, pipe dreams, but like, that's the kind of stuff with those positions. Yes. That,
prey on the teams that definitely are, you know, really,
there's,
I mean, the Pelicans,
there's not many teams though that are in that position. That's why it was so hard to find guys.
And
like,
for Houston,
couldn't even really...
I would look at Christian Wood too.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, true. I know like he did the whole tweet of I'm in Houston, like through the good and the bad or whatever, because there was drama of
he
like,
wants to have value.
But I mean, he signed there thinking that Harden was going to be there. And now, you know, yes, he's making his money, but he was thrown into a completely different situation than what he thought he was signing into in free agency. So
what was your thought, Connor? You had something there for a second.
Oh, maybe I did. I don't know. I think Jill's right on, but is there any chance that they just wait on Bagley until they have a star, disgruntled, fringe star, Kings type target star, maybe even Jerry and Grant's the type that we're talking about. And they wait and they use the expiring of what? It's Tristan and Bagley and maybe like a Buddy that gets them way up there. And if they're trying to win now, right, they're probably going to have around a 12, 13, 14, 15, that mid first round pick area anyway. They're not going to tank. Right. We know what their first rounder is probably going to look like. Maybe they use that as a trade value too. And maybe they get somebody who's good. I don't know. I mean, I keep throwing up Pascal Siakam and I don't exactly know.
I like that too. That.
He's a little too expensive, but he has a long-term deal, which is good for Kings because that means theoretically, at least they have him under contract.
Yeah. You have no choice.
If you're the Kings, like, it's just tough to trade for a guy with 1 or 2 years left when you're going to want to re-sign them because the odds are they're gone.
Yeah.
I the only trade that I wrote down that I liked, and I guess that I even spent time to think about, was Bagley, Woodard, or something like Ramsey, and a second round pick for Christian Wood. Give me Christian Wood, send Bagley to a team that'll let him play a ton, throw in one of these other guys that you clearly don't care to really play right now, which Woodard is like the top guy that you just seemingly don't really want to play, or he's not 100%, like Jill had said. Yeah, just in these situations, you have a disgruntled player who has a lot of upside, who's 22 years old on an expiring deal. It makes perfect sense to, I have to say it like this, prey on the really bad teams that feel desperate enough to do it. So New Orleans, who could be accepting a new general, or having a new general manager here soon if David Griffin gets fired, probably will be. They're 1-11. He seems like a total asshole. And then Detroit and Houston, those are the three teams I keep going back to that, like, or Toronto.
Brandon Ingram. If Pelicans really blow it up, I would be targeting that with Buddy Bagley. Like, I would be going after that. But yeah, I mean, and realistically, the best situation, I think, for Bagley development-wise would be to getting the minutes that he could get on one of these teams. He was going to get those minutes with us the last 3 years. It's just, unfortunately, the injuries took that away, and the Kings are in a 15-year drought with guys whose positions in the organization are hot. So it's just kind of an unfortunate situation all around. And I hope wherever he goes, he succeeds. He
totally
finds the, because I don't ever wish for anyone to not succeed. And I know he can't control injuries. At the end of the day, like, there is a scenario where this could have worked out. And unfortunately, it just did not.
Let's end this with making a prediction. Don't overthink it. Just make a random prediction or calculate a prediction as to where you think Marvin will end up. Connor. Where will Marvin Bagley be playing basketball, either at the end of this year or the start of next year?
Oh, I mean, start of next year, that's a completely different conversation.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, so if he's traded, where do you think he goes?
It's still so early.
I know, but it's just hypotheticals, guys. We're playing games here. I'm not asking you to be right.
I hope Marvin Bagley, like...
There you go. Word it like that.
I really hope he plays, like, finds a spot where he can, like, play well and become a real contributor in this league. Like, So I'm hoping, like, I mean, I don't know, Detroit, I guess.
Yeah.
They've shown interest a couple different times. That's probably the best chance for them with Cade and
that would be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe an opportunity there. I mean, Houston, maybe. Those are like the main. I mean, I don't think Orlando would trade for him. So no. they have a lot of young players.
Yeah, the other one I'll still throw out is Charlotte, just because he kind of fits their style of play, and they're in the same kind of situation with some of their younger guys that I think if you could. They could even package two people to match that salary and make it work. So I think that could be a dark horse just based on fit for both teams. But yeah, I'm not going to put one team. I will say Detroit, Houston, Pelicans, or Charlotte. Those are my four.
You guys are acting like I'm going to come back and just rub it in your face if you're wrong. I'm just going to say that he's going to go to Detroit. I'm going to say that. I'm going to put it out there. I think Detroit makes a lot of sense. I think him and Cade would play well off of each other. And that's a team that would be willing to take the flyer. And yeah, you throw Marvin in a draft pick for Jeremy Grant, who does not fit the team arc of the Detroit Pistons. I think both teams would be willing to do that. Troy Weaver, the general manager for the Pistons, traded away. I'm not going to be able to say his name. Sequoia Demboya, or however you say, a really, really talented high upside wing player for DeAndre Jordan, and then just released. It was like one of those trades where I'm like, what's happening here? Why did he do that?
Hey, hang on. Grant averaged 25 a game last year. Did he not?
I understand.
He's got a little more value than that.
Okay, fair enough. You might have to throw someone else in there. That's fine. But my point is, I don't think they feel any reservations to keep him. Obviously, they're not going to be like, this is our guy.
He's like Corey Joseph, where they're vets to keep things going, right? To keep things moving.
That's an insult to Jeremy Grant, but yes.
But no, it's true. He was one of, but you, if you're going to bring in these young draft picks, you need vets that are going to keep you in
keep
line,
order.
Right? You need, if you want to develop Cade, you can't have it be a free for all of just five rookies out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you need. And Jeremy, he said he wanted the money. He wanted the money in the minutes. He's perfectly fine. Like, he's made that known. Like, that he's perfectly happy with the situation.
Yeah. So we could, I mean, shit, you could talk about Marvin Bagley for days on end in Sacramento. And we do. And we're all slowly, some of us, getting more and more upset, understandably, when things like not wanting to go into a basketball game, you know, come out to the media. But we're all in unison. We wish Marvin the best, and I just hope it's quick. We can just get this over with. Like, I'm so tired of it. I've just said that to Jill. Like, I'm so tired of this shit hanging over the team. Just get the kid out, or don't put him on the bench, because now he's just there for no reason.
Well, and it's just what sucks is if you're waiting for Detroit, you're gonna have to wait till December probably, because you have to wait for that depending on who's involved. Just for people out there,
tell Marvin to go home.
December. Like the 14th or the 15th, right? Yeah. December, that when guys who signed contracts this last one are eligible to be moved again. So just beware of, you know, anyone listening, that those kind of deadlines are out there, and sometimes your hands are tied until then. And you know what? Watch the Kings, like, watch it be surprising and him end up getting run at some point. Who the hell knows? Like, I mean, it's impossible to predict at this time.
I'm like of the mindset, like, you know what, Marvin, you can stay home. We're going to go ahead and give Robert Woodard your seat on the bench. You can just chill out, make your meals, living the great life. You know, he doesn't work and he gets paid $1 million. That is the key to success. He figured it out. So congrats to Marvin Bagley. We are going to get to the game tonight, though, because I do want to touch on this real quick before we end with a Jill's water cooler. Kings are in Oklahoma City. They play at 5 o'clock our time. The Thunder are in a little bit of a roll, where the Kings have lost three straight. The Thunder have won three straight, and they're starting to find their little mojo and their confidence in this very young team. They are, and I've said it a couple times, they are the NBA's youngest team. The average age is like 22. It would be even younger if it wasn't for Mike Muscala and Derek Favors, who are 30. They're the oldest players on the team. Those two guys, their two centers, are 30 years old. Everyone else is like a rookie, a second-year player. They got a lot of upside on this team. I'm actually afraid of this team, truthfully. It seems like a game for the Kings to lose if they don't play with some effort, because this team will run you literally off the court. And they also have a budding superstar in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's averaging 23, 5, and 5, almost Tyreek Evans rookie year stat line. Actually, that's better, because Tyreek was 25 and 5, I believe. So this is a highly talented, but just a super team, but young, Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, I know Connor's shaking his head. I like what this team is forming into. Connor, what are the Kings got to do to get a win today and end this losing streak?
All right, well, hang on. You know I'm big into like betting lines and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Kings are favored by four as of last night. I didn't check today, but I would imagine it's about the same. On the road, even though the Kings have lost three straight, Thunder have won three straight. I mean, I think it just comes down to like slowing down SGA. Josh Giddey, by the way, really enjoyed watching him play.
Yeah.
Really good playmaker and rebounder. He's averaging like 11, 6, and 6. So I think he's a good draft pick. Other than that, though, I mean, this is a really raw team. They have a lot of young players. Lou Dort, I mean, he'll be in the starting lineup.
Dort's your chamber? Sorry, yeah.
I think Poku's played really bad this year. He was like NBA Twitter's like favorite player last year, and like this year he hasn't been playing very well. They score under 100 points a game so far this year. So I think if the Kings just play up to where they can, I think they'll be fine. But that's the thing is, will they? I think, you know, they had a day off in between the San Antonio. Is it two, one, or two? I keep forgetting.
One day.
So, I mean, a rest day. I think this is a good opportunity to kind of start reset, as I said in the beginning of the episode, start stacking wins against this Thunder team. Who's, you know, nobody's a slouch in this Western Conference. Like, anybody can beat anybody any given night. So they have to come, they have to bring it. And I think what they didn't do against San Antonio is they started slow and it killed them. So they have to kind of fix that tonight.
And the Spurs just never let up to the Spurs' credit in that game. The Kings started making their shots and the Spurs just didn't stop making their shots. That's obviously a recipe for disaster. You're trying to play catch up, but the other team's keeping you full arm's length away. I'm admittedly more high on the Thunder than probably anyone outside of Oklahoma City. I just see where this team is going. Not this year, of course, but in years to come, I have full trust in Sam Presti and whatever his vision is, which it seems to be collect every draft pick and draft every eligible player that's possible. And Poku, you made a good point. I will never try. Jill, do you know how to say his name?
Pokuševski.
What's his first name again?
I don't know.
Okay. You got half of it. I'll give you that.
Alexi? Isn't it Alexi?
Oh, well, that's easy. That's the easier one. Pokuševski. Yeah, I was on that NBA Twitter rave where I was like, I don't even know who this guy is. I'm never going to watch a Thunder game. But yeah, I'm all about it. But Lu Dort's awesome. I love watching Lu Dort play. They have a talented young center. I think it's Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who no one would know about, but he's a big, like, he reminds me of like a Chuck Hayes. Josh Giddey gives me.
If you're draft Twitter, you know.
Yes, that's fair. And then Josh Giddey, just because I love to compare everyone to Kings players, of course, it's a Kings podcast. Josh Giddey's giving me total Jay Will vibes. The way he is just always pass first. The passes are always like a little extra for no reason.
He's got eyes in every part of his head.
There you go. Exactly. Like, and he's got swagger. Yeah. Stanford ladies, beware. Here comes
and
Josh
length,
Giddey.
Like, he's tall. Like, I mean, so yeah, it helps.
Yeah. I'm a fan of him. And they still have Derek Favors, who can cause a little bit of problems in the low block. They should definitely dominate down low. But we said that against the Spurs too. And they proceeded to not do anything in the paint, which was infuriating because that was where they had the upper hand. So,
is
Connor, you're saying
playing again? Do you know?
I think so. I don't think he's hurt.
Because there was talk at the beginning if they were going to kind of treat him as one of those.
Oh, yeah. They might.
But then I did see
that.
Him play at one point. So I didn't know if he was only playing maybe because of other injuries. But I just honestly wasn't sure if he was actually back.
They might. They might not play him tonight. And then I'm forgetting one guy. Just got to say him. Darius Bazley. One of those like U.S. international guys, right? Like, he didn't actually go to college. They snagged him when he was like 19, and he's now getting a lot of minutes. He's playing power forward for him. He's a talent. I just think Kings fans are going to learn a lot about the Thunder tonight that they probably had no idea about. So, Connor, we're just going to say a W tonight, though. You're feeling that?
Yes, but they also are around or just under 30% a game from three. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
However, take that with a grain of salt because, like I said, three-point shooting around the league is down early on this year.
Yeah, and the Spurs were not a good three-point shooting team, and they made 18 of them.
And it just takes one night to get hot.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Kings seem like the perfect team. Like, if you're struggling, come play the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
We'll get you back on track.
But we also did not talk about the Thunder as a possible trade destination either, and they have a Favors and a Bazley contract that would match.
Darius Bazley.
So I'm throwing it out there. Yep. So just throwing it out there, they have, you know, the, you know, some throwaway contracts as well. In addition to young players, if you wanted to swap young players, that's another. Because, I mean, OKC is collecting and they could, I mean, that's kind of a perfect guy to take a shot on, right, too. Because it's not like they don't have the picks if it doesn't work out. And he would get the minutes. And you could match Jeremiah Robinson Earl, JRE, and, you know, Bagley in your rotation switches. Because behind them, they have Mike Muscala, right? They have Derek Legend. Favors. Derek Favors, and then Poku. But yeah, like, they don't have kind of big men, at least minus JRE. Like, they're fluctuating on their bigs. So that could be a team that takes a shot.
You contain the simple key to beating the Thunder, though, because Connor is pointing out they're statistically not good in any category, really. Scoring, defense, really anything.
But they play hard.
Yeah. And they have SGA, and SGA is very good.
It's scary.
That's how you beat the Thunder, is you stop Gilgeous Alexander. It's simple, but also not, because you could, you know, be manned up on him and he'll pull up from the logo and nail. Did you see that shot, Connor, that he hit against the Lakers that iced the game?
I did see it.
The coach was just shaking his head. Like, he wanted none of it, even though he made it. But yeah,
did the coach's nightmare. Shrug?
No, he was like, Gilgeous Alexander was up and down. He should have. That would have been perfectly timed. But yeah, I don't also know how to say. No one, we could do a poll and be like, name the Oklahoma City Thunder head coach. What is his name? 2 out of 10 people might know that. Do you know the Thunder's name, Connor? Thunder coach's name?
No, I don't. That's really bad. Yeah, I'm still. I still want to talk more about Wes Unseld.
No, don't get that. We need a whole nother podcast to do that. Yeah. A whole nother episode.
Well, and the Thunder's coach's last name is a tongue twister too.
It is. His name's Mark. I know his first name's Mark.
Yeah.
I probably should figure that out. But anyway, Connor, any
it's
other
like
last
Dinault or something like that? Yeah. Like, it looks French, so I mean, ooh, I'd probably pronounce it wrong, but yeah.
Any final thoughts, Connor, before we take it away to Jill for the Friday water cooler?
This is what I've been waiting for this whole episode.
Okay. Sorry to wait. This has been an hour and 5 minutes that we could have just got right to the good stuff. Jill, go ahead.
Okay. So you know how we always hear about, you know, the nightlife in certain cities, you know, and you're never really sure, like, is it based on fact? You know, like, have there things that have happened previously, like in Miami or Atlanta, of like, oh, watch out when, you know, teams are playing there, you get that kind of nightlife.
Right.
What do they say? Slow down type thing. Well, when it comes to Atlanta, you know, and I know people talk about, like, you know, cause Lou Williams was doing the whole, like, was it Magic City Wings or something like that? So
the club town, Atlanta.
Back, you know, 10 years ago or so, if not even longer than that. Sorry. Well, this was actually during this is way longer. So 90s and early 2000s. So 20 years ago and more. There was a club called the Gold Club in Atlanta. It was a hotspot for athletes, celebrities, and high rollers that also featured a bunch of goofy anecdotes during the 90s and early 2000s. Basically, several pro athletes were given sexual favors by strippers for free at clubs, including Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, John Starks, Reggie Miller, and Dennis Rodman. So there was ended up being a big Gold Club trial where the owner
is this owned by Robert Kaplan, Sarver.
That's what I was going to bring it back to, right? Oh, during the trial of a Gold Club owner, Steve Kaplan, on racketeering, among other charges, it was revealed that dancers were given as much as $1,000 apiece for putting on X-rated shows and performing certain acts for certain athletes. So this was extremely embarrassing for the NBA and its athletes, several of whom were stars. The owner of the club ended up being found guilty and sentenced to 3 years of prison. And the Gold Club ended up closing down in 2007. But I thought this was interesting because if you read the whole Sarver thing, they were talking about how when they were trying to bring in LaMarcus Aldridge, that he was like telling them that he needed to like someone get like,
Say it, Jill.
Have a baby, like get a baby mama, so that he is like forced to sign here so we can like see the kid. I mean, it was totally ridiculous, but back in the 90s and 2000s, like these kind of places existed. So it made me wonder, did any of these things go on in Atlanta, Miami, like these other cities? Obviously, we wouldn't know about it unless things came out, but there are reasons behind, you know, scandals in these cities having that,
reputation.
Reputation. So, and with star players.
Yes, the fact that you knew where that was going, Connor. I was like, sounds like Robert Sarver's.
I feel like I ruined the butt of the joke, so I apologize.
Nope. You were good.
No, it was funny.
I was happy someone understood it, because I was going to tie it back to that. Like, well, but it was called the Gold Club scandal. Yeah.
All right. So I have this, Jill, that was fantastic. This is way better.
Thank you, Jill.
I will say that because I was coming on, I was like, I got to find something that is similar to a Jill's water cooler. Now, this is nothing in comparison to that, but I also tie it to a little hometown.
Don't forget that. You're a nobody here, Connor. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, how'd you find that? I have no idea, because I did some research last night and like I couldn't find anything very good. The only thing I found, this is a Michael Jordan story about him bullying Bill Cartwright. And why I thought this was important is because Bill Cartwright went to my high school, Elk Grove High School. Shout out, Thundering Herd, probably the worst mascot in high school sports around the area. After Bill Cartwright was traded for Charles Oakley, he was hazed by Jordan. Cartwright was. He would throw passes intentionally, missing his hands, would trash talk him and play and be a jerk to him. And he called him Medical Bill.
Why?
That was his starting center on championship teams. He called him Medical Bill because implying he was injury prone and purposely threw him passes that were impossible to handle.
Jordan was ruthless. Yeah. He did this with another teammate, though, too, as part of the Last Dance documentary. I forget the teammate's name, who Jordan would try to haze him when he got on the team. This was like Jordan's thing. But the guy was so nice and like just a great dude that Jordan just gave up because he was like, damn it, I like you too much, man. Like, I can't even. And the guy, to his credit, I don't remember the player's name. He didn't let it bother him. I would imagine he took it as a compliment that Jordan was even giving him attention. And then it totally backfired on Michael Jordan because he was like, this guy's way too cool. Like, I have nothing more to say. Bill Cartwright apparently was a prime target, though.
It's the same strategy that guy from Cowbell Kingdom uses with local podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't.
You might need to cut that. Oof.
No, I'm going to start with that. That'll just be the opening. Just totally out of context.
That was mean. I'm sorry.
And welcome to that. No, I mean, the guy deserves it. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm not going to say anything else. I like this podcast. Okay, so Jill and Connor with a little water cooler action on this Friday. That's just a little double dip, a little double dose for everybody at home. That's great, Connor. Yeah, nothing compared to Jill's, but I appreciate the effort.
I had no chance. Jill's kills it every time. It's my favorite segment. I just, I don't know. And then I started deep diving, and I don't like, that's where I was trying to figure out. I was like, how does Jill find these stories?
I don't even ask. I've told her I'm not even going to ask. I don't want to know. I like the mystery. Did you hear about the one, though? We got to wrap this up. But did you listen to one about like the original Days of Basketball and that it was just like an octagon, like an all-out fight? Did you listen to that episode?
I did, and I have many thoughts, but we're already too far into this podcast.
Yeah. Just tell me, would you watch basketball if it was like that still?
I would probably be a different kind of fan. it would definitely be entertaining.
Yeah.
It reminded me kind of like slam ball. Remember when slam ball was a thing like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Not in the same way, but like a different take on basketball.
I just took it as like the ultimate level of street basketball where it's like the only rule is there are no rules.
Yeah. And I'm just sad that there's no video of it because I would love to see how they like stacked players on top of each other to try and get like the ball from the balcony area and like.
There's got to be a photo somewhere.
Like, the way they described it, like, yeah. Well, I think
it looks like one of those movies. Before those movies possible, that turns into like a Hunger Games or Maze Runner type movie. That's like, that's how it starts.
Yeah. No, it's definitely Hunger Games. Hunger
Squid Games 2.
Haven't watched it yet. Gotta watch it. Everyone's talking about it. All right. That's going to do it for us on this Friday episode of the Hoopball Podcast. Thank you to Connor Sutton. Go listen to his breakaway podcast about the Sac Republic and just follow the Sac Republic. Give them all the love. The team is changing a lot of things now, apparently. So there's a lot of topics to listen to, and I know Connor's always got something to say. And Jill, that for me to say that, totally, yeah, ironic. Jill, thank you as always. And then I got to end on this. Team USA versus Mexico tonight in U.S. men's soccer. Let's go get that W. We need that, boys. We need that for World Cup qualifying. Huge game. I'm stoked. All right. You guys have a great weekend. Slater, dudes.
Thank you, guys.